Hello, everybody, and welcome to ODI Day in Washington, D.C. I'm Sarah Pantoliano, I'm the chief executive at ODI, and I'm really thrilled that we are in Washington, D.C. on the sides of the IMF World Bank Spring Meetings to basically, for the first time, gather a number of senior colleagues under the leadership of Andy Herskovitz, who is our executive director here in Washington, D.C., to start what we set out ODI North America to do, which is really to influence conversations in Washington, D.C., to influence conversations, particularly when it comes to the MDBs and the role that they have, as well as, of course, you know, many other of the issues that ODI works on. We have a fantastic day of events, of a lot of really important conversations, starting now with, you know, callable capital and then many more on technology, on seeds, you know, and a number of events today that I really hope you will stay tuned for those who are joining online or, you know, stay in the room for those who are with us here. But I also want to use this moment to introduce the chair of ODI North America. We're really privileged to have with us at ODI, as chair, the inaugural chair of ODI North America Board, Lisbeth Steer. I just want to welcome Lisbeth here to add her own welcome.
Thank you, Sarah. It's an enormous privilege for me to be joining the ODI North America Board and become part again of the ODI family. Some of you may know that many years ago, I was a fellow at ODI in London, and very relevant to this discussion actually happening here this week. My first job there was to look at the Monterey conference and the Paris Declaration and the effectiveness of, does anybody still remember the 2005 Paris Declaration? It's actually good to revisit that. But anyway, I am so pleased to be part again of this wonderful organization. I don't know whether you've been following the press and the DevEx articles, how many times people are referring to the work that's been done at ODI and the thinking that has been done at the organization. Precisely. So it's just beginning. And this discussion today is incredibly relevant to the conversation that is going on in DC this week and very close to my heart. I was just telling colleagues here, I've spent the last few years working with Gordon Brown on something called the International Finance Facility for Education, which sort of is trying to create a kind of callable capital. And I see some friends here who have done works on that as well. So anyway, thank you. Welcome to this ODI Day. Thank you for joining us. We are looking forward to hearing from you and collaborating and hopefully have an impact here on the discussions. Thank you, Sarah, and thank you for your leadership. And also Andrew, I should say thank you to Andrew, who is leading the organization here and will make it very, very successful, I am sure. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lisbeth. Andy will moderate a number of discussions this afternoon. So in order to save time now, I'll hand over directly to Chris Humphrey, our Senior Research Associate, who will moderate the discussion on callable capital. But I hope you stay with us for the rest of the day. Thank you. Over to you, Chris.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Chris Humphrey. I'm a Senior Research Associate at ODI. And I'm joined by my colleagues, Bianca Getzel, Eamon White, and Chris McHugh, who have had the privilege and pleasure of working with this past year. I hope they say the same about me. And we're here today to talk about our project on MDB callable capital. Quick thanks to Sarah for introducing us, of course, the ODI team for putting all of this together, this great event today, and all the events throughout the day, of course. And also for supporting us on this project over the past year. And also, I see Maura here to the MDB Challenge Fund for supporting this event over this past year. Also, a quick thanks to the MDB management teams. We have Hasatu here with us, but also the folks from all the other MDBs have really taken a whole lot of time to engage with us over the course of this year. And we've had some really interesting and wide-ranging discussions with them. You will have seen, those of you who are interested in this topic, the reports that were just released a few days ago. They are grappling with a lot of the same issues that we have been in this project. And we've had a lot of back and forth. And I think their contributions and engagement with us have informed our work. And I think we've played a little bit of a role in helping inform their thinking as well. So that's been a really productive exchange, and as well with a number of shareholder governments. I should say just really quickly, the run of the show, it's going to be about 30 minutes. We're going to talk about our project. Then we'll bring a panel who I'll introduce in due course to come up and give their views on our project as well as the issues more broadly. And then we'll open up for Q&A at the end. This is being live streamed now, and it is also being recorded, just so everyone is aware of that. If we could go to the next slide. So why are we looking at callable capital? What is so interesting about this particular topic? Well, it's an unusual instrument at all of the MDBs. It is a shareholder commitment with a total value of nearly $900 billion to contribute to the MDBs in case they were ever to face a severe emergency, which they never have. But we think that that is quite a powerful commitment. It's an international treaty commitment, so it has the weight, the force of national law in every shareholder country because they've ratified these treaties. And what it means is every single bond that all of these MDBs have issued is more than completely covered by the sum of paid-in capital plus this guaranteed callable capital. And we think that's a very powerful instrument to mitigate the risk that the MDBs face. And we think it is possible, this is already on the books of the MDBs, and we think it is possible that it could be leveraged further to increase lending capacity of the MDBs. And that's why we are here today. And that is also the conclusion that, sorry, not quite yet, that's the conclusion that the G20 CAF report came to as well 2 years ago in their second recommendation, which said that MDBs should incorporate a prudent share of callable capital into their capital adequacy frameworks. This project is designed to sort of see how that can be done, and we sort of have three big goals. The first is simply understand what this instrument is. The second is to understand sort of how it fits in the broader context of how MDBs and shareholders understand and manage their risks. And the third is to come up with proposals for how it might be incorporated into capital adequacy policies. If you could go to the next. Thank you very much. And I mean, one of the first questions is, well, what is this thing? And if you want to understand it, a first place to start is the statutes of the MDBs themselves. This is their treaties. This is where callable capital is described. It is basically really the only place where it's described. And the wording is a little bit ambiguous in a few places. We looked at three particular aspects in the statutes. The first is to try to understand what the instrument is. It's called capital. It's divided into shares, and it's part of the shareholding structure of each shareholder. But yet it's ring-fenced. You're only supposed to be able to use it to pay off bondholders, which doesn't quite meet up with how people normally think of capital in a modern regulatory sense. So in some sense, it's also more like a kind of liquidity guarantee, if you will, instrument. Then the question comes of how it might be triggered. When can you use this? What's an emergency exactly that will allow you to trigger callable capital? And that boils down to whether you can use it to help an MDB face and recover from a severe shock, which is a going concern instrument in the jargon of the industry, or is it something that can only be used when you're on your way towards liquidation, which is a gone concern instrument. And the difference between those two has important implications for how it might be used to support lending. Our understanding, our reading of the treaties is that is in most cases a going concern instrument. And that seems to be the conclusion that the MDBs themselves drew in their most recent reports. The last question is, who can trigger a call? The statutes very helpfully just said the bank without saying who they mean by the bank. Is that the president? Is that the management? Is that the board of directors? Is that the board of governors? They're not very clear. The statutes are not clear on that. So that should probably be clarified a little bit, because all these different aspects of ambiguity contribute to limiting the way that the credit rating agencies give uplift to this instrument, this powerful guarantee instrument, to the MDBs. And it also might inhibit MDB management themselves from wanting to deploy this instrument in the ways that we suggest. Next slide. We think clarifying a lot of these aspects can be done relatively easily. The board of directors of all these MDBs are empowered to be able to issue interpretations on the statutes. We think they should do so. Some MDBs already have done so. In some cases, some decades past, and more could be done in that direction to give greater clarity to how this instrument can be used. Second, we think that they should release a policy or policies, suite of policies, that describe the ways that MDBs face stress and how callable capital fits into that. Not necessarily an exact trigger of when exactly you could use it, but in relative terms compared to other instruments and other actions that management might take in this continuum between business as usual and non-viability, which Eamon is going to talk about a little bit more. And then some policies on the mechanics of the call, like the plumbing, just basically how it actually gets done, which we can talk about later if we wish. That can all be done without any changes to the statutes. One could also consider changing the statutes themselves. EBRD and AAIB have certain language in their statutes that appears to be a little bit more restrictive than some of the other MDBs, and they might consider changing that. And any of the MDBs could consider removing those ring fences around callable capital. So it's not just to pay off bondholders, it's just capital, a contingent capital, but just capital that can be used in any way. And that could, we don't think it's necessary in an absolute sense to be able to do some of the reforms that we're talking about later, but it certainly wouldn't hurt. But of course, changing the statutes is a higher political hurdle because you have a higher voting threshold to be able to do that. So it needs to be considered carefully. So this is only talking about the MDB side of some of the issues around callable capital. There's the whole other side, which is the shareholders themselves and their budgetary processes. And for that, I will turn over to my colleague, Jan.
Thank you, Chris. So before going into the actual conclusions of the paper that was released by myself through ODI just a couple of days before all of the MDBs released the official information, including the shareholder templates, why do we care about the shareholder process? First of all, major credit rating agencies, all of them, have noted that greater clarity on the shareholder process surrounding callable capital would strengthen the value of the instrument insofar as it provides greater clarity to MDB bondholders. But most importantly, irrespective of credit rating agencies, understanding the process through which shareholder governments would respond to a call is extremely important to following the G20 CAF recommendation of incorporating such in the capital adequacy frameworks of the MDBs. So with that in mind, Early last year, I started on an exercise to try and make sense of all of this. A bit before there was this official push by the governments to do so. And through this exercise, we were able to find information on 21 governments that are reported on within the publication that cover 59.5% of total callable capital commitments across the seven major MDBs. That's around $530 billion in callable capital commitments. So extremely great coverage in that regard. We chose the shareholder countries by looking at G20, but also highly rated shareholders, as well as shareholders that have a high shareholding size within the major MDBs. So the evidence was gathered in a couple of forms that evolved through the project. The first one was interviews with ministries of finance and ministries of development cooperation, some of which are in the room, and I want to thank extremely for all of their inputs, as well as written statements and pieces of evidence provided to me regarding the shareholder process. Another way to look at these is the templates that you see at the bottom of the reports that were published on Friday. And in addition to that, even though I cover 21 governments, eight of these did not provide direct information to me. Thus, I accessed that information through publicly available data, contingent liability reports, fiscal risk assessment. And what sheds light about those, especially those eight governments, is something essential to this process, the idea that even with just what's publicly available, we can start to peer into how most countries that are shareholders of the MDBs have funds that can be quickly dispersed to respond to a call. Great examples of these are India and Brazil, for example, and I'm sure Ivan can speak to that as well. So with that in mind, this is the executive summary, if you will, of my paper in two quick bullet points. First off, callable capital is most often treated as a remote off-balance sheet contingent liability. That means that according to most international financial reporting standards, international public accounting standards, as well as Eurostat guidance, there, unless the call, the likelihood of a call exceeds 50%, there is no need to provision for callable capital. The governments that I will discuss that have done so have chosen to do so. They did not need to do so. In fact, no government is currently required to provision for a call. And as Chris McHugh will talk about to follow, they are nowhere close to that 50% probability at all. And the other major thing to take away is that across the MDB system, and this is something that you will not get from looking at the individual reports, over $60 billion could be made available in less than a month, which far exceeds, again, what would be needed in most realistic callable capital scenarios as per Chris's modeling, which he will discuss later. So how did we get to this $60 billion number? So there are two major ways that governments can respond to a call. The one that is most interesting to credit rating agencies and MDB management is non-legislative processes. So where you don't need to go to Parliament, you don't need to go to Congress in order to get approval. Why? Because that is obviously much faster and a bit more reliable as well. So already appropriated resources were $32.3 billion across five shareholder governments. The ones leading that effort are the United States and Australia, both of which with large appropriations to the IBRD, and Australia with sizable appropriations to the Asian Development Bank. New Zealand has a little asterisk because it fits somewhere in the middle. So if any New Zealand minister is here, he can speak to that as well. They have a process called impressed supply, which I interpret as somewhere between appropriation and emergency expenditure powers, which are the second way that callable capital could be answered to extremely quickly. And this is a bit fuzzier, but even looking at the reports published by the MDBs, you get a sense of that number. And they speak to it very concretely. IBRD says this number in total between appropriated and emergency expenditure powers is around $65 billion just for the IBRD, for example. And the way that that happens is through several processes. One is contingency reserve funds, which are appropriated reserve funds in case of emergencies that are chosen and selected based on an appropriation at the start of the financial year. So at the start of the latest financial year for every government, which ranges in months and times, was around $60 billion for the governments I covered that have reserve funds. Obviously, not all of that should be taken as going to callable capital, but we can safely assume that to answer a call, these resources could be quickly tapped into. A lot of governments also have emergency expenditure powers, not related necessarily to contingency reserve funds. A good example of this is Germany, that has appropriations for its guarantees or its equivalent of guarantees that could be dispersed for callable capital. Denmark has a similar situation. France has a similar situation. Switzerland, on the other hand, has a case whereby, and Brazil as well, they can go to supplementary appropriation, which sounds like a budget process, but they can actually disperse funds and get parliamentary approval afterwards. So again, timely and reliable way to respond to a call. What I quickly want to shed light on is the non-accelerated, i.e. legislative process. And the reason this matters is even though we love to look at the left side, at least MDB management and credit rating agencies I've spoken to have obsessed on what is on the left side hand side of the screen, what Chris's modeling shows and what has been clear from the MDB reports is that we could see a capital call coming months, if not over a year in advance. Meaning that governments, if they have the political stability and capacity to go through a parliamentary process, they're not going through an election year, could perfectly follow a supplementary appropriation and answer a call in a timely fashion. There are also extraordinary budget appropriations, as I've discussed, or special appropriations, which can take place at any time during the financial year while still requiring parliamentary approval if there is time to do such. So, with that in mind, going back quickly to the left side, I've summarized it here in two different formats. The gray bar looks at total callable capital commitments. The blue bar looks at the amount that is readily available. And the light blue bar is the estimated magnitude of a call based on Chris's modeling, which follows scenarios with 50% default and LGDs of 45%. What we very quickly see from this picture is that callable capital readily available is 2 to 8 times what would be required under a stress scenario, and 14 to 60% of total callable capital commitments already on the books, a lot of them readily available to be dispersed. And that message is one that I hope is the biggest following my inputs today. And the fact that we have several of these MDBs not showing an estimated magnitude of a call is because Chris's modeling found that those MDBs would not reach a call under the scenarios I explained. So finally, where does this leave us? It's a pretty good picture that we've gotten to. A lot of governments have clarified their processes. The ones that haven't would also be able to answer to a call in a timely fashion and have inputs into this process. But there are still several steps to go. First off, those shareholders that have not yet clarified their processes for responding to a call should aim to do so promptly following the examples of those who have. This is especially important for MDBs such as CAF, whose shareholding base is effectively not covered by the current process. Additionally, shareholders should work with MDB management to determine the circumstances and process related to a call. This has everything to do with timing, forecasting within the financial year to understand whether supplementary appropriation is viable, for example. And once all that has been completed, major shareholders should issue a statement reinforcing their support to MDBs. And I say this following a statement that came out, I think, yesterday, doing something along those lines, but what I am referring to here is something closer to the General Counsel statement by U.S. Treasury a couple decades ago now, which is a much more reinforced and verifiable legal commitment. Shareholders can choose to issue this individually or as a collective effort through a G7 or G20 process if they see fit. And finally, shareholders and MDB management should coordinate both amongst themselves and especially with credit rating agencies about how callable capital is integrated into their rating methodologies. Hopefully, what is made clear from this presentation is that a AAA rating is not only what guarantees a shareholder's capacity to respond to a call. There are many other factors that can influence that decision and how credit rating agencies and MDB management themselves see it. But in order to take these decisions, shareholders need to be comfortable with the risk they're taking. So I'll hand over to Chris to talk about just that.
Thank you, Bianca, and good morning, everyone. Can I control my own slides? Right. Okay. Great. Oh, hang on. How do I back up? Okay, there we go. Got it. Right. Okay. So the purpose of the modeling was to evaluate the conditions under which MDBs might experience stress, estimate the probability of a call on capital. And I added one extra component, which is to find a way to relate lending capacity to risk appetite. And that sort of underlies one of the options that we put forward as a way to incorporate callable capital into a capital adequacy framework. So I'll just discuss that briefly at the end. Just for clarity, I work with publicly available data, so I didn't have the internal detail of policies, etc. So all of these things, you know, the usual modeling assumptions, I had to make quite a few. One of the advantages of working with public data is that I, as an external observer, I tried to strip out all of the organizational differences and come up with a comparison, which is something that is a little bit different. So I shall dive into a little bit of detail. Just to give you a flavor of what the outputs look like, there's a reassuring amount of detail in the reports we published. So I just wanted to give you a flavor of what we did, what I did. I was able to simulate the growth of a development bank over a 10-year period, and during those 10 years, recreate some financial statements and test strategies, different growth strategies, different stresses on preferred creditor treatment, different default rates, and there's a sort of a flight path for a bank through time. So what you'd see on the left-hand side, if you can see the chart, is a scenario for the EBRD, rolling forwards through the 10 years, an aggressive growth strategy. And you'll see for each year, there's a range of potential sizes of the loan book. And that just reflects the sort of the random shocks that I put the bank through. On the right-hand side is a probability of stress at different sort of levels, if you like. So in this particular scenario, over the 10 years, it's only after about 6 or 7 years that there's a potential probability of some stress at the sort of the level where the bank has lost 40% of its capital. Now, this sort of answers the question of, you know, would shareholders sit around for 6 to 7 years watching this slow motion train crash? Well, probably not, right? So what the model helps you do is just get your head around the realism of some of these scenarios. And I suppose I could sort of play God a little bit and control the way that these things evolved and experiment to find the conditions under which things would become stressful. The conclusion, as Bianca highlighted, is the probability of losing all equity and capital reserves is essentially negligible across all the MDBs. And even if you take a proxy for stress, because stress doesn't happen then, stress will happen earlier. You know, maybe if one loses half capital, you're starting to get in a position where wholesale funding markets would become jittery, and that might be the real point of stress. So 50% is a little bit arbitrary, but we had to pick a point, and that's broadly representative of what the private sector would think of in terms of capital loss. Even with 50% of loss of capital as a threshold, the probability of a call on capital is essentially, it's extremely low, if not zero. And I think that comes through additionally in the various reports that were published by the major MDBs last week. So the next slide I want to show you is this idea of relating risk thresholds to lending appetite. And this, I took a different modeling approach, which is different than the normal risk modeling that the MDBs would do. And this chart shows, using this second method, the probability of stress at this 50% level over a 3 and 5 year period for each of the MDBs. And this is just a comparative with some pretty bold assumptions, but I think the order of magnitude is reasonable. So for example, we hear the dark blue column for let's pick the RBRD, over 3 years, a 0.8% of stress, assuming management do nothing. Over 5 years, 3.2% of stress, again, assuming that there are no management actions taking place. The interesting part here is then you can start to ask a question of what happens if you normalize the type of risk that each bank takes. So if each bank's taking a different risk, if you could somehow harmonize that to one level, if every bank took the same risk, how would that change the shape of the balance sheet and how would that change lending appetite? So I'm going to show you with one last slide. And before I do that, don't get too hung up on the absolute numbers because there's some billions of dollars involved, but it's more the order of magnitude, I believe, to be correct. So here we have a small table, and on the left-hand side, there's two metrics in this world. One is at what threshold do I believe that I will experience stress? The second is the probability of reaching that threshold. So a 50% capital loss or a 60%, I think it's quite relevant for an MDB perhaps to think about what that level would be. It's subjective and it's subject to market sentiment and shareholder signaling, but I think that's one measure. And then if in this table, all MDBs took what I call 2% risk of reaching that threshold over 3 years, we have $43 to $83 billion. If you take 4% risk, 68 up to $110 billion, a one-off adjustment in lending capacity. So 6 to 16%. And I think the point here is that this is one of our options in terms of callable capital. If you believe that the shareholder commitment enables you to push away the point at which stress would develop, you could conceive of taking more risk in the loan book because your high probability, or your very sort of low risk tail events are covered. You would be able to perhaps take a bigger risk appetite and expand lending. And I think these are the sorts of orders of magnitudes that are useful. You know, a shift from 2% to 4% in risk, potentially 10% increase in lending. So it's quite asymmetric. But on that note, before you actually take new risks and expand lending appetite, it's quite important to have good visibility on the risk management process and the risk control. And I just wanted to hand over to Eamon to cover on that part.
Thanks very much, Chris. Very nice to be here. Just keeping an eye on our time. So I guess what we've heard so far is that really reassuring things on one level, which is that the risk of a call is low. And even if there is a call, shareholders are in a good position to respond to that. So that's a very reassuring starting point for our work today and the position of MDBs. I think kind of leaning more into the sort of the other key question that we looked at, which was what's the role of callable capital in supporting expanded credit provision of MDBs? I think that leads us to sort of Chris's work, which is looking at how can we adjust our view of risk appetite? How do we consider the point at which stress hits as a basis for expanding the ability of MDBs to lend based on their preparation for those scenarios and taking into account the role that callable capital plays. But as Chris says, that depends on how MDBs approach this question of the stress continuum and how their capabilities and infrastructure for identifying different points along that stress continuum, all the way to a call, all the way to the point of understanding when non-viability might arrive. I think through our work, we heard a lot about, obviously, the importance of maintaining the AAA and the consequences of losing the AAA, which is, you know, the next rating. So there's a big gap between that point and often what callable capital is, where the topic is discussed, which is avoiding a default, which is at the kind of other extreme end of the spectrum. I think what we're proposing and MDBs do, and what we've written a report together about this, is how do you enhance MDB's capability to sort of segment that stress continuum so that there is a clear understanding of obviously when the rating changes, but there are a clear understanding of the data, the modeling, the governance and the actions that MDBs take as they progress through stress so that they are better able to demonstrate to their wholesale funders, to their shareholders, that they have the capability to respond to that stress. And ideally avoid it deteriorating any further, but also that it's clear that they have the capability to act in the appropriate fashion in sort of mild, medium and severe stress all the way to a call on callable capital. So what did we propose? So I'll just focus straight on the recommendations. So the first, I think, is that it's important to consider the lending services that MDBs provide as critical financial services. What does this mean? This is really to steal a concept from the commercial banking world. And it's a way of describing the sort of the policy implications of a sudden termination in those lending services, the impact it would have on the sustainable economic development of borrowing countries, the impact it would have on the policy objectives of shareholder governments, make the paradigm of placing them into a liquidation where there's a sudden stop in the provision of those services more or less unacceptable. And if we define MDB or many MDB lending services as critical, it means we have to have mechanisms in place to ensure that they can continue. So we have encouraged MDBs in our report to develop the capacity and some of the preconditions for being able to respond to differing levels of stress all the way to the most extreme. And that includes developing a clearer description of the stress continuum. MDBs are already doing that through the stress testing, reverse stress testing work that has been going on in recent months. Building policy frameworks, monitoring arrangements and governance that allow them to identify and take appropriate action as stress might emerge in their balance sheet. And then I think having a clear methodology for understanding what non-viability means. It's certainly not the loss of the AAA. It's definitely well before default. As Chris has sort of described, you know, if we relate this to sort of a private sector paradigm, it might be loss of 50% of your capital base. I think what we're saying is that we don't necessarily know the answer, but it's important to have a very clear mechanism and a framework in place to identify when that might happen, because it's essential to maintaining the confidence of your wholesale funding market. Your shareholder governments will also be very interested in this description, because it may be a trigger for action that might impact credit provision or indeed a call on callable capital. One way of institutionalizing this is to build recovery plans. This is not a particularly innovative recommendation. I am stealing this idea straight from one of the main lessons learned from the global financial crisis for commercial banks. MDBs probably already have some idea of management actions that they might take. I think this is about institutionalizing these actions, making sure they're fully operational so that you're not working out what it takes to deliver an action in a crisis. You already know you can do it and how long it takes to capture the capital and liquidity benefit. And then finally, I think one of the recommendations in the report is to consider the role of external panel of, to support shareholders and MDBs build what is relatively novel capabilities within the MDB sector. So that takes us to sort of, I think, some of the things that are necessary to capture the benefit of callable capital in expanded lending and to be able to maintain access to wholesale funding markets at sustainable prices, not just in the good times when you have AAA, but when that comes under pressure in different types of stress. So finally, I think one of the, as Chris kind of started with, I was trying to understand what is callable capital? What sort of instrument is it? Is it a contingent capital instrument? Is it a guarantee of bondholders only? How might it work? And I think one of the proposals we developed alongside some of the risk adjustment ideas for expanding lending capacity of MDBs was a new contingent capital instrument. We called it a perpetual bond facility. I'll try to describe it and we can always discuss it afterwards in lunch. What makes it different? So it's a shareholder commitment to buy capital debt capital in a stress to be defined, but maybe a non-viability event. It's designed, those instruments are designed to expand the capital base of the MDB at that point. So it's core capital. It provides contractual certainty that's expected by capital markets. So wholesale debt markets will be interested in the contractual certainty of such a facility provided. However, a key point is it's unfunded. No money up front. And no change in the state's contingent liabilities to MDBs. It doesn't change the risk of a call. It doesn't change the risk that shareholders have to MDBs. It just provides greater levels of operational certainty that that will be implemented. So that's the idea of the facility. It's a recovery action. In addition, the nominal amount of the facility, whatever that ends up being, we think can qualify as tier two capital today. And as a result, expand the lending capacity of MDBs today. So I think that's one of the kind of key proposals we'll leave you with. There's different ways of framing this. The benefit that it could provide, we think it's subject to a cap. One example, if we applied it to the capital base of the IBRD, we think it could release between 50 and 70 billion of additional lending, one-off lending capacity. So I'll stop there. One additional slide to structure where this facility, where this type of capital would sit within the capital structure of an MDB. Very colorful slide, too many things to mention. It's in the report, but at the top, obviously you have paid-in shared capital. It's the most junior instrument. Relating it to sort of innovation we've seen in the last 12 months, hybrid capital sits senior to the shares and junior to the perpetual bond facility, which we think would qualify as a type of tier two capital. And in that way, you sort of see how you have a development in a capital structure up until recent times just had shares. And now you might have a whole range of shares, tier one capital and tier two debt capital, all there to protect the bondholders, all there to protect the interests of shareholders who are effectively supporting the bondholders. I've already overrun, so I'll pass it on to Chris again, who can wrap up.
Actually, the computer will, of course. Thank you very much. Is this now working? Yes, indeed. Thank you. Just one last option for how one could incorporate the value of callable capital. We've already heard Chris discussing how, as a guarantee, it might adjust the thresholds at which stress hits and therefore open up more lending capacity. Eamon has discussed this perpetual bond facility, which can either be something new or also a way to restructure existing callable capital. The third logical way is to think of callable capital as indeed a capital instrument of a very specialized type. It is called capital, after all. It's in shares. That's how it's structured. And in fact, a number of the MDBs actually include it directly in the equity portion of their balance sheet, including the World Bank. They write in there on their annual financial statement, they write in 290 something billion of callable capital, and then they subtract it away right away. So it's sort of like it's there and then it's gone, which is a little surreal, but they clearly conceive of it as a type of capital instrument. That's why they put it in with their equity. That was clearly the way that the founders conceived of it back at Bretton Woods all those decades past. It was functionally a type of capital, which was a much more common type of instrument in the commercial banking sector at that time. And the markets also saw it, this callable capital, as a useful part of capital adequacy of the MDBs. A little historical anecdote, when the World Bank was expanding its loan book in the 1950s, it got to the point where its loan book was almost as big as paid-in capital plus the United States government's share of callable capital. That's what the markets cared about. Those two amounts of money gave the markets security. And as the loan book grew to be almost that size, the World Bank decided that it needed a capital increase to keep the markets happy. So they got a capital increase, and it was entirely callable capital. There was no paid in. And that allowed the World Bank to expand its lending book. So this was directly part of the capital adequacy frameworks in the MDBs back in the day. And we can say that this is ancient history. And it was certainly a number of decades past, that is true. But in 2023, the methodology used by Standard & Poor's, one of the largest rating agencies, is exactly conceptually the same. They say that a chunk of highly rated callable capital, they don't just take the United States now, they also take a number of other highly rated countries, is just as good functionally as capital, and they plug it in to the capital adequacy ratio. We think it is quite conceivable for the shareholders to do the same thing. If you're going to go ahead and do that, that is something that requires care, that requires being very, very clear and very credible with capital markets that this instrument is reliable and can be accessed in a timely fashion, which gets to all the recommendations that we spoke about earlier about reforming the processes and all the rest, shareholder side and MDB side. One is also going to have to make some choices about how much capital we think can be used. What the rating agencies do is they look at the ratings of the countries that provide the callable capital. That's one way to do it. One can also think about the budgetary processes in place or how much has been provisioned. That could be another way to think about it. That's up to the MDBs to decide. This is not about saying that the MDBs should follow the methodology of Standard & Poor's. That's not the message I'm trying to say here. We don't think MDBs should be following anybody's methodology for their own internal approach to capital adequacy. We think they should look at it themselves with their shareholders. S&P is taking a conceptual approach to callable capital that we think is interesting and should be considered. And if they're going to do that, of course, the MDBs need to do what they have begun doing already in this issue, which is working as a system with each other and move in a credible fashion, in a collective fashion, to incorporating it into their capital adequacy frameworks and explaining that in a credible way to rating agencies and market participants. So final slide here. Actions on the left, we've spoken about all of these already. I won't go over them all. Short-term actions, I think maybe this last one, which is some of the issues that Eamon spoke about, might be a little bit more medium-term, take some time to think about these issues. But these to us are clear, kind of no-brainers. It seems to us self-evident that they need to go ahead, the MDBs and shareholders need to go ahead with doing these reforms right now. It's going to do nothing but strengthen the situation and improve the way MDBs are perceived by rating agencies and capital markets. And some of these are already underway or being considered now. The reports that just came out are a great example of a step in this direction. One can then also decide whether you want to actually go ahead and incorporate a chunk of callable capital into your revised capital adequacy framework. We propose three options for how you might do that: as a guarantee, which Chris spoke about, as a type of capital, which I spoke about, and this perpetual bond facility that Eamon spoke about. And now it is simply up to the shareholders to decide where they want to go with this. Whatever they decide, it's quite clear that this is not going to be a solution to the capital needs of the MDBs. This is not a magic bullet that's going to solve everything. So it's also quite clear that more capital is going to be needed if we want these institutions to do what we're asking them to do. And it's also relatively evident that if you're going to be doing these sorts of reforms that we're talking about here, it's going to be a lot more credible and a lot more powerful when you're engaging with capital markets if you're doing it with fresh shareholder capital in hand. So these two things, to our view, should go in parallel together. And time is running short, so I think it's time to go ahead and make some decisions on these issues. Hopefully, at least some preliminary decisions now at the spring meetings. With that, our presentation is concluded. I'm sure we're well over time. I apologize for that. Yes, if you folks could take your seats and if the panelists could join us here, that would be great. I think we're just going to have to keep going right away since we're running over time. I'll just go ahead and introduce as these folks are coming in here. We have Margaret Kulo, Deputy Assistant Secretary for International Development Finance from the U.S. Treasury. We have Hasatu Ensele. She's the Vice President of Finance and the Chief Financial Officer of the African Development Bank. Daniela Refaschini, am I pronouncing that correctly, from Moody's Ratings, and Ivan Oliveira of the Ministry of Finance of Brazil. So we're just going to take some turns here. I'll ask a couple of questions. These folks will respond, and at the end, we can open it up for Q&A. Hopefully a couple of questions before we all run off to the lunch buffet afterwards. Margaret, if it's okay, maybe I'll start with you, get you settled there first. I understand that the United States, along with a group of other shareholders, have worked with the MDBs on an initiative related to callable capital. We've seen the reports that have just come out from the MDBs a few days ago. We also saw a statement from the US government, as well as a number of other governments, about callable capital just yesterday, which is very, very positive. And I'd be interested to hear a bit about what motivated that effort, how you felt the process went, and your reaction to the results.
Right. Thanks a lot. First, let me say thank you to ODI. Chris, Bianca, Eamon, Chris, really a great bunch of work over the last year plus. I also want to say thank you to Maura and the MDB Challenge Fund. We had a lot of great conversations around around these issues at Sharm El Sheikh. Thanks to you, and thanks for continuing to support this work. We really appreciate it. And thank you also to the authors of the G20 Capital Adequacy Framework review, which was started under the Italian G20 presidency, continued under the Indonesian presidency, published under the Indian presidency, and we continue to implement under the Brazilian presidency. And the reason I raise that is all of the shareholders, and especially the G20 shareholders, are really interested in making sure that these institutions are utilizing their capital and delivering the outcomes that we want them to deliver. And this, I think that context is really important, because these institutions are a critical piece of delivering the development outcomes that we want. We want them to be able to be there when countries really need them. That requires a cautious approach. And we need them to deliver in cases where what they're supporting is frankly not commercially viable fundamentally. So we're talking about a set of institutions that support things that are very different than what a commercial bank would do. So I think that perspective is important to start with. So together with a pretty big group of shareholders, actually, we've been looking at all of the CAF recommendations, but this one CAF recommendation in particular, to incorporate a prudent share of callable capital into the capital adequacy frameworks of the institutions. It took us a little bit of time, I would say, to be fair, to understand fully what that recommendation meant. We had the benefit of additional conversations with Chris and his colleagues at ODI and the authors of the CAF report itself to make sure that we really fully understood what that recommendation was before moving forward with it. As many of you will know who follow this, there are a number of the other CAF recommendations that we've already acted on in a number of the institutions over the last year plus. So we started once we better understood the exercise, we began within the institutions an exercise where the U.S. is a shareholder. So the five major MDBs, the World Bank, the African Development Bank, EBRD, see you here, IDB, and the Asian Development Bank, to look at pulling together this work to respond to the recommendation. And the reports, which were issued by the five institutions on Friday, basically do three fundamental things. First, they do some stress testing to identify what it would take to actually get to a call in capital. And I think the previous panel was pretty clear about the probability of actually getting to a call is very, very small. We've always known that, but we've never actually looked at what does that mean in terms of numbers. So that was a very helpful addition to the conversation. You could put a number on small, and the number is also small. The second thing that those reports did was clarify what the institutions would do if they were to get to a call. So what would precipitate that, and then what would the process be for them to actually effect a call? The third place, put some clarity. The third thing that those reports did was clarify what shareholders would do in reaction to that call. So that's basically, in a nutshell, what those reports look at. We're very thankful for all of the work by the institutions, by the working groups within the boards, the shareholders supporting that to get through. This is very complex. And also, we wanted to be cautious in the work. What I would say the outcome of the report really clearly, I want to highlight five things. So first of all, what this exercise has shown, callable capital subscriptions are legally binding commitments by the shareholders. We talked about that a little bit in the previous panel. Second, the MDBs generally have the ability to make a call well in advance of being able to meet their financial obligations. So there's a lot of time, and that's important because third, the shareholders then have time to respond. And as was identified, in some cases, the process to respond might be a little bit more lengthy. There is plenty of advance notice that a call could be coming, and then the process, should a call come, has also some time built into it. So it's very, very important clarification in the reports. We also were able to demonstrate that where for the banks that must exhaust first their loss absorbing assets before being able to make a call, the process of the MDB arriving at that point of default is so long that the shareholders have plenty of ability to respond long before you get to a call. And then maybe the last point to highlight on the takeaways from the reports, there is a fair amount of callable capital that's already available because it's already been appropriated. So should those institutions actually get to the point of a call, there is actually some funding there. And I think the previous panel already talked about that, so I won't go into the details. So we have taken up the recommendation of the CAF. We're going to continue to look at the recommendations within the G20 CAF review. This was careful, cautious, and what we've been working on is basically putting more clarity around probability of a call, again, very small, how the institutions would affect that call, and how the shareholders would respond to the call.
Thank you. Maybe I just follow up very quickly what you might see the next steps would be from, or what's the U.S. looking for next steps on this agenda?
Thanks. So first, and I think was already mentioned, Bianca mentioned already, we, together with a number of other shareholders, we issued a public statement yesterday demonstrating that, in fact, shareholders support these institutions. We support our callable capital obligations. So that was one of the important next steps. We'd like to then further clarify the process. Ultimately, that CAF recommendation is that the institutions find a way to reflect the value of callable capital in their capital adequacy frameworks. And they do that currently to some extent in different ways. And we'd like to take, again, a cautious, careful, because we want to recognize the role of these institutions of being there in the hard times for the countries that need them. But we want to take a look at how we can reflect the value of that callable capital into the capital adequacy frameworks. And then we, you know, just broader, want to demonstrate that we continue to look at these G20 capital adequacy framework review recommendations. This is a really important part of the G20 leaders' commitment to the institutions.
Thank you very much, Margaret. Hasatu, if I may turn to you next. I know AFDB has been one of the leaders in financial innovation in these most recent years, exposure exchanges, risk transfer operations, and most recently, of course, the hybrid capital instrument that was released to capital markets this January, if I got that correct. I'd be interested to hear how these efforts to improve or maximize the use of callable capital might interface with those innovations and what prospects you see at AFDB for making more use of callable capital.
So thank you very much, and good morning, everybody. Thank you very much to the ODI, to the Millennium Challenge Fund, but also to you, Chris, and your team, Bianca, Iman, and Chris, for this important work. And you know, and Margaret, you were mentioning the G20, and I think that the work of the G20 and the impact that it has on MDBs for the past 2 or 3 years have been unprecedented and quite and great, you know, showing how, you know, working together can yield you know, marked changes. So thank you very much for this. So yes, the work that is being done has been very important. You know, you mentioned the hybrid capital. We issued $750 million hybrid capital issuance in January. We had demand for $6 billion, which was not something that we had anticipated. And we came out at a price that was much lower than what we had anticipated, proving that there was really a market for this type of instrument. And the G20 has been talking about how do we mobilize the private sector for MDB development. This is one way to mobilize the private sector for development. So we had 270 investors. We met about 130 investors. And these were investors that had not really bought MDBs, that do not necessarily buy MDBs because it's a different portfolio. It's a hybrid capital portfolio, et cetera. So we had those very interesting educations about global capital, about the way that we operate as an institution, so which took a lot of time, and sometimes it was 2 or 3 discussions that we had to have. So which is why this work that has been that is being done and which has been led by the G7 and G20 shareholders is going to have a tremendous impact, or is it will have a tremendous impact. So it is going to have an impact for us for hybrid capital, but also on one of the initiatives that we are spearheading, which is the channeling of SDR through multilateral development banks, because the solution that we have developed and we've been working with the Inter-American Development Bank is a hybrid capital based solution. So when we were structuring that hybrid capital for multilateral development banks. And again, some of you know that hybrid capital is not a new instrument. This is something that is used on a regular basis by the financial institutions, but it has never been used by an MDB. So we had to make sure that it would fit our model, that it would fit the 3 credit rating agencies' different ways of working, and that we'll also meet our objectives. And our objective was to have a leveraging impact. So it's not $1 in, $1 out, but it's $1 in and a multiple out. So that's when the global capital came in, because one of the credit rating agencies, S&P, requires for the loss absorption feature that the principal be permanently written down right before a call on global capital. So which is why we had to explain global capital, because some of the investors were saying, oh, when you have a general capital increase, we're going to lose our investment. So we had to go through that education. You know, this work that has been done by you, Chris and the team with regards to the probability of a call on global capital is going to comfort them in the understanding or appreciation of how remote it is. You know, you've talked about, you know, the outcome of this exercise merely provided you know, quantitative analysis of confirmed what we already knew was a very low probability of a common callable capital. So yes, so maybe providing much more comfort to investors that are coming on a hybrid capital transaction. But also one thing that that I need to highlight is that the process of clarifying the call on global capital, and as you indicated, Margaret, that it's a legally binding commitment for some of the shareholders, this is extra comfort to our regular bond investors, because on top of the AAA, they have now the comfort to know that if an MDB, for whatever reason, is no longer able to meet its debt obligations, they know that there is a set of shareholders that have legally binding commitments, that have processes in place, which will allow them to come in a timely basis in order to make them whole on their investment. And as you've indicated throughout the presentation, this is not something that is going to hit you overnight. So it's something that is going to be, that you're going to see. You're going to see the train coming. And for our part, we have what we call a long-term financial sustainability framework, where basically twice a year, we do a 10-year projection of our financials. We look at our internal ratios. We look at credit rating agency ratios. And at management's level, we make sure that we are on the green throughout the life of the capital, general capital increase horizon. So we do get, you know, general, we've had capital increases every 10 years. And the agreement that we have with shareholders is to make sure that we meet our ratios. So let me stop here.
Thank you. Maybe just a quick follow-up, if that's okay. Just curious if you have any thoughts of next steps that might come from AFDB management or shareholders to move this agenda forward, or is this the MDB report that just got issued, is that enough, or what do you guys foresee coming next?
Okay, three things. So right now, at the same time, there is a meeting of the CFOs, CROs. I was supposed to be there, but I decided to come here. And that's why you don't see many of my colleagues from other MDBs. But you have a full day at the Inter-American Development Bank from 8:30 until 5 p.m. today. And I'm going to go back there. Discussing with Moody's, S&P, and Fitch. And one of the topics for discussion is going to be the global capital growth. So this is, now that some of the credit agencies said, you know, we need to see clarity. And so let's see what it means. So is it going to change the way that they appreciate the global capital of MDBs? And then second, in terms of next steps, you know, I really like the perpetual facility? So basically, when we were discussing callable capital and how do we account more for callable capital, and I remember I was having the discussion, I think, with the G20 expert group at the time, and I said, callable capital is treated this way by credit rating agencies, but the way for them to take them more, to give more value to callable capital would be to have something that is close to a guarantee. And what you've proposed, the perpetual facility, is a contractual agreement. And basically, that type of contractual agreement is given more weight by the credit rating agencies. But then I have many questions. So what does it mean? It will be restricted because it's unfunded. It's going to be restricted in terms of credit rating. So not all shareholders would be able to provide such perpetual facility. What does it mean in terms of voting rights? So, these are questions that would be... Why would a shareholder decide to do it? So why, for example, the US would decide to do it without extra voting powers, without extra anything? So these are the type of things that I'd be, maybe it's in your paper. So I'll make sure to read the paper. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Hasatu. Daniela, there's been a lot of talk about rating agencies. You're on the hot seat now. Everyone's interested in what the rating agencies think about all this. Because of course, the MDBs, almost all of them, have a policy where they are required to maintain a AAA rating with all three rating agencies. And that has a lot of implications that run throughout all of this discussion and the broader CAF agenda. So I'd be interested to hear how Moody's thinks about callable capital, how it's incorporated in your methodology, if you can give us a few words on that, as well as any other reactions you might have to our project here or the end or the MDB reports that just came out.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. Callable capital is a unique feature of MDB, and we take that into account in our MDB methodology, in particular when we assessing the strength of member support. When assessing the strength of member support, we typically look at the ability to support of the shareholder and also to the willingness. And callable capital inform actually that aspect. In terms of metric, our view is informed by the share of callable capital over total debt. The work that ODI has done is in this area has proved very useful. In terms of the proposal that have been made, one of the most relevant proposal is the clarification and the strengthening of the trigger around a capital call. As has been discussed before, according to the MDB statute, in order for a call to happen, typically the MDB have to be at risk of meeting his financial obligation. This means that we are facing a situation of severe stress. That
from a rating agency perspective, has limited the usefulness of capital, of callable capital, to a situation of extreme stress. And this is why, essentially, the callable capital is treated in this way in our methodology. It's also important to mention that we acknowledge for some MDB if there is a clear, a strong mechanism that inform a capital call. For example, we see some cases in which the government have to respond very rapidly to a capital call. There is a strong process in place, and also the authority for making the capital call is well defined. That, for example, is the case of the ESM. And in those cases, we actually give an uplift in terms of the support. So the assessment of the strength of member support that we have in these cases is actually higher than it will be in another case. I think the other relevant aspect from our perspective of the work that has been done related to the clarification of the procedure around the capital call. As we know, every sovereign government has his own fiscal framework, and clearly depending on that, a call can take from a few days, 3 weeks, to many months. And this is quite important given the trigger of the capital call. So the clarification around that is something that is very useful for us. Actually, we have the case of an MDB for which legal opinion was received in terms of the timeliness of the response of the government in case of a capital call. And that has helped us actually to inform our assessment of the strength of member support and allow us to provide an uplift to that. So I think more clarity around this is actually very welcome. Another aspect we are very interested in is how the MDB will incorporate callable capital, given the recommendation, how receptive they will be to this recommendation to incorporate callable capital in their capital adequacy framework. From our perspective, what we will look at is clearly how, to what extent this is prudentially done. And we can say that a higher risk tolerance or lending resulting from that might not have an impact on our assessment if this other condition occur. And one of those conditions is actually having more confidence in the shareholder support. And finally, what I can say is that we fully agree that it would be beneficial from the MDB to see this as the implementation of a coherent strategy, and clearly very helpful to see the statement of support from the government.
Thank you. That was very interesting. I'm frantically taking notes there. Thank you very much for that. Maybe just one quick follow-up. I know we are taking both you and Asatu away from the meetings right now between the CROs and the rating agencies and the CFOs. And I know this is sort of an ongoing discussion that you have with the MDBs. And I'm just curious if you can tell us anything about that process, how that's going along, how you guys view the interaction between the rating agencies and the MDBs.
I mean, what I can say is that we always had a very frequent and established dialogue with all the MDB that we rate. Clearly, this interaction and this dialogue has intensified follow the publication of the CAF, of the G20 CAF recommendation. And we put out our view on some of those recommendations. How do we see that from a credit perspective? And also we have provided feedback to the MDB individually on certain aspects of the implementation.
And maybe just one last one. Is there any plans for an update of the methodology anytime soon?
So this is something that we have been asked several times. What I can say is that at the moment, we consider our methodology appropriate to reflect some of the changes that we are seeing in the sector. And I can point to the example of hybrid capital, but also to the example of callable capital, given that we have the potential to reflect this strong enforcement mechanism. But at the same time, we are very conscious of the changes of the sector. And we typically at Moody's review our methodology every few years. So we are clearly likely to take into account that in next methodological revision. But what we expect is clearly an evolution rather than a complete change.
Understood. Thanks very much. Yvonne, saving the best for last. I know you're involved in the G20 agenda right now as Brazil's presidency and you with the Ministry of Finance. And I'm just curious to hear any ideas about how the callable capital agenda in particular and capital adequacy more broadly fit into that agenda for Brazil.
Thanks, Chris. ODI, congratulations on the work done. We've been following you for some time now, and we count on you, in fact, to deliver on our G20 presidency, especially on MDB's reform. So great cooperation. Yeah, let me just touch on a couple of issues I think would be relevant for you to get the broader scenario of our G20 presidency on MDBs and how CAF review and your work is so valuable. So in our presidency, we have this idea to have a strategic, let's say, deliverable out of IFA MDB reform agenda. That is the G20 roadmap for MDB's reform for bigger, better, and more effective banks. So it's really not bringing we don't need to bring new ideas to the table. I think we need to select a little bit the ideas and digest them in the G20. And in fact, during the Indian presidency, we didn't really have much time, for example, to go and take a deep dive into the IEG's report recommendations and so on. So that's what we're right now doing. And together from the G20, so reinforcing the debate within the G20 on what's the way forward for the system, push with a roadmap that it would be focused on or based on three pillars: capital, operations, and impact assessment. So this is the strategic document that should be out to pushed by the G20 by the end of the year. And that would set the agenda for the next 5 years on the system. On capital specifically, and that's where we have a great connection with the work that has been done since the Italian presidency, at least, and we continue to reinforce that in our presidency. The agenda of CAF implementation is critical, and there is a strong push from our G20 presidency to continue that. So that's why this kind of work is so important for us. So CAF review implementation is critical, but also a broader discussion on capitalization of the system, and beyond just stressing the system in the way it is right now with the capital that we have, but also thinking about ways to, including hybrid capital, but also regular reviews of capital by the board, so that we can really see in the midterm where the system could be bigger, but together being better and more effective. So there's this whole agenda on operational review that we should really follow a little bit what CAF review was in terms of delivering a report with recommendations, with an agenda for implementation in the near future on operations. So making the system better, connecting the banks, bringing also an agenda of streamlining access, facilitating for the clients, standards, and so on. But also impact assessment, that's another pillar that right now, during our presidency, the idea is really to deliver something on methodologies to assess impact assessment, and maybe in the future go in a way that we could think about common methodologies that would feed back to the system in a way we could create maybe a race to the top among the MDBs in the long term. But back to capital, where it's really critical for our debate here. The agenda of callable is absolutely important, and it's great to see the way it evolved since CAF review and up to now, where we do have a lot of, you go to the granularity and how we can really, you know, think about what can be done, which banks would be most affected. So it really, we start to see a map where to go and where to focus, and that's great to see that. From our G20 presidency, we've been quite supportive, both for the shareholders' interaction with the CRAs on this, but also for the banks. So in that sense, I'd like to reinforce that not only we're really pushing for a stronger cooperation debate within the G20 on MDBs reform, but also we're bringing the banks closer to that debate. So in that sense, reinforcing the debate with the banks themselves and using the heads of MDBs group as this point of contact for all of the agenda that we have on MDBs reform. So it's great also to see how the banks are flexing muscles and getting a lot closer to common agendas. We're forcing them a little bit to say, look, bring your views on this specific topic to our next IFMDB meeting. So stressing a little bit how they could really think about solutions together to make the system bigger, better, and more effective. And on Colombo specifically, Brazil, we were not in part of the shareholders that launched the statement yesterday. In fact, there are some salt and pepper issues in Brazil that are not so straightforward on special appropriations that are there. So it's easily to be done, not really that much. In that sense, obviously, the rating of our countries do value a little bit what's going on in our countries. But for example, in our case, there is a very strong agenda when it comes to fiscal conditions of the country. And our minister is really pushing for a very, you know, getting to zero deficit this year. So that means with a lot of to do on social issues after COVID and everything, it's not that easy to maybe if we were in a stress moment and probably countries like Brazil would be even more stressed to say, look, the appropriation, we have special appropriations in Brazil, so it would be easy to go and get the money. Maybe not that much, to be quite frank. But anyway, that's a good way forward to see. And we have started the process within the Minister of Finance, but also together with the Minister of Planning that leads the agenda with the regional banks in Brazil to see how we could plug to the initiative that the US is leading on, showing to the world what a callable would be in Brazil in terms of the processes inside the government. But also we need to have that broader constraints that has to do with the fiscal conditions of the country, with the social conditions of the countries that go a little bit beyond the rating of the country itself. But anyway, very important to have that in mind. But again, we really value it a lot. We've been quite supportive of this agenda, both with the shareholders and with the banks. And tomorrow, in fact, we're going to have this special event together with Rockefeller and OSF in the afternoon. And the two issues we chose from the presidency to bring to Washington and discuss were exactly an agenda with a dialogue with the CRAs, especially on callable, an agenda on SDRs rechanneling to the banks. So we continue the discussion, tomorrow with full support for it. And I think there is a value there in really getting to know better what these different animals that MDBs are and how they could be better assessed by the system in a way we could really continue to push the system to the MDB system to go riskier, to do more, to generate impact at speed scale that is necessary for some time now. Thank you.
Thanks very much. You raise a lot of interesting points there, and it's worth certainly highlighting that this we're just talking about the financial machine here, and there's a lot of a bigger picture going on about what needs to be done to have these institutions be as effective as they can be. But it's also worth emphasizing that the machine, this financial machine, is underneath everything. And if you don't have this, the rest of it doesn't work either. So it's an important part of the story. Just to take off your global G20 hat for a moment and think as a Brazilian ministry official, you sort of alluded to some of these issues. What combination of actions would Brazil think would be most appropriate to get these banks to the level of capital capacity that they need to do what we're asking them to do?
Well, continue this agenda on CAF review implementation is stressing is absolutely important, but we do consider that at some point in time, especially in old banks, like the World Bank, let's say, we need to go back to capitalization processes. So it's really back to, well, whether our treasuries will be able to go there and say, look, we want, now we have a new World Bank, the evolution process is there, almost by the end of it, so implementation period. And then after that, with a bank that would be a lot better, more efficient, connected to global challenges. But in order to scale things up, at the end of the day, we need to say, look, let's go to another round of capitalization, but maybe together with other interesting innovations that we're discussing a lot, hybrid capital. You know, something that our minister is quite interested in really is really in exploring ideas that do connect well to the agenda of hybrid capital, but also the agenda of SDRs rechanneling. Because even countries like Brazil, we do have a lot of international reserves, so almost $350 billion. If we could think about innovative ways in which we could use our international reserves, and instead of bringing money just to US T-bonds, if we could think about new instruments within the World Bank, for example, where we could bring to a special bond and maybe take a spread out of it to finance AIDA, for example, and we would be willing to, you know, take less money out. So part of the interest should go straight forward to a new mechanism that could finance, like, if we could take like $10 billion from our reserves, place it somewhere, and take 1% of it every year to finance AIDA mechanism. That's something that Brazil could think about doing. So we're really dealing with the international reserves management here, but could really feed the system of MDBs in a way. And it connects well with the idea of hybrid capital or something different that we could think of. A lot of capital could flow in not regular capital. So the capitalization and regular would be necessary, but there's a lot to be done around it. So innovations like these ones, thinking about new mechanisms where we could really go, and even if we could take, you know, marginal part of it, if you plug together, you know, a lot of money from, including from developing countries, could boost the system quite dramatically. So in that case, if you take 10 billion, when at least 100 million US dollars every day for AIDA, for example, it could be straightforward and connected to something that we could do in Brazil and not connected to budget. Because at the end of the day, I think the budget constraints in some countries will continue for some time now. And that's why those innovations are so relevant to for the system to go bigger.
Thank you very much, Ivan. We, of course, have run over our time almost entirely now. It's going to be a very short Q&A. I do want to acknowledge the presence of Franny Loitier, who was the leader of the G20 CAF panel. And it's got to be the leader of one of the most successful of these kinds of report that has been done in recent years. So good to see you here, Franny. We have time for a couple of questions. Maybe we just gather a couple and then we can distribute them to the panelists if anyone has anything they would like to ask.
Merci. Thank you very much. I'm Stéphane Mousset. I'm executive director on the board of the African Development Bank, and I can testify Assato's leadership on the issue. Thank you, ODI, for organizing the event and for the presentation. I found very clear, both technical and pedagogic, so that was well done. My question will be, if we were to consider CC or a share of CC as capital, would it be everything being equal, or don't you think that will retract on shareholders, that will retract on shareholders for them to provision where and when they don't so far for those who don't provision? So do you anticipate any consequences in terms of accounting and fiscal impact?
Other questions?
Hi, Paul Cadario from the University of Toronto, a former World Bank staff member. I want to ask a sort of related question to all the panelists here. I think it picks up on our Brazilian colleague and our Standard & Poor's colleagues' hints. To what extent is an irrevocable guarantee irrevocable? Because the political risks that have to do with reputation or political sentiment within a major shareholder, well, in their civil society in particular, questions about the World Bank Group's adherence to its environmental and social standards, questions about the probity and integrity of its senior management, questions about its effectiveness. Could the United States, you know, there are many frenemies on the Hill, like Maxine Waters and Congressman French Smith, who are very supportive of the bank with conditions. And under what circumstances in a, let's say, functioning political system here in the United States, would some, and perhaps in other countries, would those irrevocable, maybe even paid in and appropriated guarantees, cobble capital, actually possibly not be so firm? Thank you.
Maybe one more question. Yes, please.
Hi, Chris Klubb from Convert Blend to Finance. Two questions, maybe one for you. The crux of your that you did with your colleagues in the first panel largely results in even extreme scenarios where huge probability of defaults and huge loss given default. There's more than enough capital within these institutions that you don't even need to call the capital. So I guess two questions, and that's consistent, I think, with your paper from 4 years ago, All Hands on Deck, where you said suggested with the existing capital, they could actually take on $800 billion of existing exposure with existing capital. So I guess what triggers the need to call callable capital in that scenario? I know that Moody's, S&P, and Fitch largely engage with the MDBs, and the management teams at the MDBs know that given the capital I have, the maximum leverage I can have is X, Y, or Z, from what I understand, 4 to 7 times. So I'm just wondering, what triggers the callable capital? And maybe from U.S. Treasury's perspective, I'm just wondering, in terms of engaging with your MDBs, as I understand it, Moody's, S&P, and Fitch has a pretty good understanding with the management team as to, given the existing capital they have, how much can they take in their exposure, development assets? They're well within that. But I would imagine if President Adesina had to call the U.S. Treasury tomorrow, and so, by the way, I have to call callable capital tomorrow, I don't think anyone is going to be seeing that as a good news story, right? So I'm just wondering, I understand that the MDBs are managing well within their existing capital, knowing that if we ever get into a scenario where you actually have to call the capital, that's going to be perceived as a failure. So it's just a matter of how does U.S. Treasury look at ensuring that the MDBs that are maximizing their development impact with the existing capital they have?
Thank you. Okay, maybe one more.
Eric Bergloff, Chief Economist at AIIB. So it's great that the credit rating agencies and the MDBs are sitting down together, because it's very difficult for individual MDBs to have push this envelope, because you know it raises all kinds of issues. So we need to do this as a collective. But it sounds like, from what you described, that most of these signs of support from shareholders are really up to the shareholders. And it seems like, you know, that conversation is much more important actually than the one between MDBs and credit rating agencies. So there were several concrete proposals in the report here of what could constitute sort of evidence of support from shareholders. Do you have any comments on those? Or could you say what more? And maybe it would be interesting to hear also maybe from the US, you know, where, how you see this conversation with the rating agencies.
Sorry, Chris, over here. Yeah, so the online, there's just one other online question, if I could just read it out. So this is from Watts Humphreys. It says, looking at the demand side, that is project/member demands for MDB loans, both hybrid MDB/private and pure MDB, what are we seeing? Are there bankable projects ready for capital that are not finding needed MDB loans? So that's the last one, Chris.
Thank you. Maybe I'll just address that one real quick. I mean, obviously, we're not really talking about the demand side, and I think that gets to what Yvonne is talking about, making a better and more effective bank. That's then going to help promote demand. And the issue of project pipeline is a huge one. There's no question about it. But that's, we're not talking about that so much in this particular discussion, although it's a super relevant issue. And maybe one just other comment. I mean, a lot of these questions get around to this point. I think the perception is amongst this research agenda and the CAF agenda more broadly is these institutions are simply over-engineered.
there is so much strength underpinning them that that gives us the intuition that they could probably do a lot more and still be safe. That's where a lot of this is departing from, fundamentally. Maybe I just direct a couple of questions. This issue from Stefan about the implications for shareholder provisions. I don't know, Yvonne, or if any of you folks want to address that issue. And if you're going to talk about that, Margaret, there was another one about sort of the politics of how irrevocable is irrevocable, that maybe you could address them together.
Yeah, thank you. I think part of, and then when I go to Eric's question too, part of the way we designed this was for both many shareholders to move at the same time and multiple MDBs to move at the same time for exactly the reasons that were laid out, that there's power in sort of looking at this across the system. And, you know, one of the things that we tried to make sure was this is an examination of, given the system, how do we apply, not how do we change, right? So to your question, Stefan, the shareholder templates that were provided in the case of each of the reports make clear how each shareholder deals with the callable capital question. And it's slightly different in every case because, you know, we all have different systems for accessing those resources. And that was part of the issue. It was a bit of a black box. And there have been a number of attempts to try to make this what's existing more clear over time. This is certainly not the first time, but I think this is more comprehensive than what has been done before to examine that. We have regular conversations, have had since the CAF report came out, with the credit rating agencies to make sure we as shareholders understand how they think about these problems. So how we've had them talk through in quite a bit of detail their methodology, so we understand what their methodologies entail. You know, each of them are different. Likewise, the shareholders are each different in response. Just quickly on the president at Ashina call saying, you know, we're going to do a call tomorrow. We would have heard from Hasatu 18 months or 2 years before that phone call ever happens, which is, I think, or never. Because we would have seen that coming long, long, long before. So I think that's really one of the strengths of the report, too, is the point is that's not going to happen. That's just not how the system works. There's enough built in. We have an extra complex, you know, political process in the United States. It's frankly always been quite complex. We have to speak to multiple committees, multiple interests, and yet we have been able to demonstrate for decades our support to these institutions, whether it's through capital increases or replenishments to the soft loan windows in the institutions. And every year there's a different flavor of how complex that conversation can be. But we do have that quite actively, quite regularly. And yes, we do believe, and as Yvonne mentioned as well, you know, and the back of this is quality, high quality institutions providing impactful support to the countries in which they operate.
Thank you. Yes, please, Hasatu.
Just wanted to add that a call on callable capital for an MDB will be an absolute disaster. And I think it's the end of that MDB business model and the whole change in the MDB, because it's a failure, because we have a risk appetite statement, AAA. So we have to manage against a AAA, number one. Number two, it means that we've lost the preferred creditor treatment, because there would need to be credit events, so our clients not paying back. It is a failure of our financial and risk management systems and model, but it is a total loss of shareholders' confidence. Because basically what we do is that we have the trajectory, we look over the next 10 years, when is it that we're going to need a capital increase? We start discussions with shareholders. And if there is no capital increase when we expect the capital increase, we do have levers at our disposal to make sure it doesn't happen. So it is reducing our lending trajectory, it is changing the type of risk that we take, it is a significant risk transfer transactions that we do. But if shareholders say, I'm not going to do a general capital increase. And then we go to a quote-unquote capital increase. You know, the new MDB is going to be a totally new, different one.
Thank you. Yeah, and just, you know, in the absence of doubt, the point here is not to line up so we can trigger a capital call. That is not what this is about. The point is that this is an instrument that is there at the end of the line. And even if it is a complete disaster for the African Development Bank, which it would be, the bondholders are still paid. Yeah, that's the point. And because that comfort is there, that allows the MDBs to be able to shoulder a little bit more risk than they might otherwise do. And that is the whole point of this. I don't know if Daniela, you had anything you wanted to add about the engagement with shareholders, perhaps that might be interesting.
Yes, maybe might be of interest that we have also a close relationship with the shareholder at Moody's. The same team that is rating sovereign is also the one that is rating MDB. So we have also close conversation with them. And I think that might be something. But
I don't know if you wanted to add anything on any of those points about, no? Maybe we should wrap it up then. I think we're over time. We're between you and the buffet, which is downstairs, is it not? No, out upstairs? Anyways, there's a buffet around here somewhere with food and we will all go find it. But we thank you very much for your attention and I hope it's been interesting. Thank you very much.